Good evening and welcome to the Professional Learning for Teachers channel on Radio EduTalk. My name is David Noble and Dalgetty Bay as ever, and delighted to have on the show this evening teacher Craig Jamieson. Good evening, Craig.
Good evening, David.
And great of you to join us this evening, and we're going to be talking we're going to be hearing from you a project that you've been involved in, that you've started recently around flipping your classroom. Now, I think we may maybe ask you in a moment, Craig, just to explain a little bit about what we mean by that, because it'll be a term that I'm sure many listeners will know an awful lot about, but many listeners similarly may have only heard of it in passing.
Sure.
We'll find out whether it's something that's both embedded in your own practice and maybe more widely across Scotland. First of all, although I'll say, no doubt there'll be people eager to put comments and questions to you over the next half hour or so, and if you're listening into the live show or indeed to the podcast, you can get in touch with Craig in two ways. You can email edutalker, that's edutalkr at hotmail.co.uk, or you can pop something on Twitter using the hashtag edutalk. I'll also say that we've got some extra resources, and again, if you're listening to the live show, if you go to edutalk.cc, the webpage, up in a blue bar near the top of the page, you'll find a link to Craig's blog, excellent blog that's been updated regularly over the last few months, all to do with this flipped classroom idea in practice. And if you're listening to live show, you may indeed want to click on that link and have a wee read as you're listening to Craig. There's also a link to show notes and Dropbox, and in there Craig's kindly given us some YouTube links. I've also kind of looked at the new standard for career-long professional learning and kind of picked out some areas I feel Craig's work it kind of exemplifies. And also Craig's offered us up a couple of reflective questions, and I'll read them out just now. Again, you might want to consider these in your own time or while you're listening to tonight's show. So Craig's first question, Craig hastens to add that this is not meant to be controversial. He's not trying to lead people down a particular avenue, but Craig's asking, if you were in charge of establishing a free education system from scratch, say to begin in the next year or so, what would it look like, and what would be your main priorities? And that's not a criticism of the current system. And secondly, to what extent does your practice make use of ICT in ways which add value to digitally native learners? And again, I've just read them out, but they're available to peruse at edutalk.cc. So without further ado, Craig, can you give us just a brief introduction to your career in education, and then introduce what you understand to be meant by flipping the classroom?
Sure thing, David. First of all, thanks a lot for having me on Radio EduTalk. It's something I actually listen to and find a really good professional learning resource myself, so I'm kind of honoured to be on. So I just like to say thanks a lot, very much. First of all, before we get started.
Well, that's great, Craig, thanks.
I've been a teacher for 9 years. I've worked at Hamilton Grammar School in that time in the maths department. I think one thing I would say about my teaching career is I'm a teacher that really likes being in front of kids. I love the interactions you get, in a classroom. So it's always been something that I've been kind of reluctant to leave in a kind of promotional sense. Looking at the flipped classroom, I've not really been aware of it for that long. Although I've always kind of innovated and tried to kind of look at other avenues to do things, like using the solar system with the SQA, which is our online assessment resource, and trying to kind of pilot personal finance award and all these kind of things. So it wasn't until like January 2014 that I started my kind of journey into flipped learning itself and found out about the term, really. And I kind of stumbled across it by accident, in fact. I don't know if you've seen any of the TED Talks, David, and it's something that you look at regularly or anything like that, is it?
Yeah, usually around kind of holiday time, when I go up to the Western Hours, I like to kind of download a few onto my iPhone. But I watched a few today, and the guy behind Khan Academy, it's just absolutely fascinating.
Well, that's it, and that was the very first one that I stumbled across myself. I think it was Let's Use Video to Reinvent Education. It was one of the ones that I provided you with, a link to. And that really kind of got me on this path to thinking, how can we kind of leverage technology better in the classroom to kind of improve the way things are just now. And I suppose at a basic level, flipped learning is for people who are doing pre-sure or haven't heard the term before, it's just using video to move the direct instruction like out of the classroom and then being able to use that kind of repurposed time more wisely. I suppose to do all the things that we never think we could time to do as teachers, you know. I don't think anybody's to-do list is very short these days. And we're always looking for time to do these extra things like higher order thinking or introduce more challenge and more group work and collaborative learning. And I think that the major kind of plus point for me about flipped learning initially certainly was like, I can get time back here. This can actually buy me some time back in the class to do these things I've always wanted to do. So as I say, that's a kind of wee brief introduction to how I got to starting to look at flipped learning itself. So,
yeah, that's great. And so can you just take us through then what you've then actually done to develop your own practice going down this particular avenue? What are the various ideas underpinning your current project, i.e. the one that you're presently blogging about?
Yeah, sure. As I say, after seeing the Salman Khan video and kind of looking a wee bit deeper into things, I kind of wanted to pilot this approach, and I kind of thought to myself when I was looking at it, I can't just do this, you know, flip one lesson and see how it goes. I kind of need to go in and dive in with both feet and look at it over a period of a block of work. And as I said, I'm a math teacher, so I chose my second year math class. Initially, I was looking at the higher curriculum because a lot of that in maths is lecture-based. So from my experience with higher classes, I could see, you know, sometimes 40 minutes, 45 minutes was spent lecturing the class and then giving them an exercise and sending them home and then starting the whole thing all over again the next day because the pace is so high. The stakes are too high, I think, at this point for me to jump in without any kind of research backing, that it's not a kind of proven method of raising attainment. So I went for my second year class and I decided I was going to flip an entire unit of work. So I kind of went to my DHT, who was head of second year, and said, would this be okay for me to do this? You know, like, no more homework, videos for homework. It's quite a kind of a bold step in many senses, and I think that was the major thing for me from the school, was that they were enabled me to give like complete autonomy to say go for it. It sounds fantastic and provide me with a bit of guidance in that regard. So how I've set it up is I video myself and try to do it in one take, basically just at my board it's not an interactive board, it's just a basic, you know, dry wipe markers and all that, and I deliver the basic content of the lesson, be it Pythagoras' theorem or equations or whatever it happens to be for that little block of work, and then the young people watch that for homework and they come in the next day with, as I say, the kind of basic knowledge of what we would be doing in that lesson. I host the videos on YouTube, so if you go on, I've got a YouTube channel, Mr. Jameson Maths, I think it's in your links as well. And that'll give you an idea of the type of videos that I'm producing. It's nothing too technologically up there. It's just basically a flip camera on a tripod pointing at me and the board. And you'll occasionally see the Johnny walk in and things like that. A couple of them do wee retakes.
I was wondering who it was.
But I think what I've got out of it is that the kids actually like the kind of one take aspect of it, and it's been good for me as well in that respect. I've not had to kind of go back and go, I wasn't too comfortable with that, I'll need to do that again. And they really like the fact that it's as they would see me, and I think that's an important thing, or it's been an important thing for me. So as I say, I host it on YouTube, and I also use the learning platform called Sophia. That's on sophia.org, sophia.org, and that allows the kids in the class to get a login. Which I think is, when people hear about flipped learning, they go, yeah, but what if the kids don't watch the videos and how can you monitor that? That provides me with some analytics and some data that allow me to monitor who's on, when they're on, and embed quizzes in the tutorials and things like that. So that's what I've set up. In the class, when the kids come into class now, as I say, I've won back a lot of time. So as you can see from the blog, we're doing a lot more practical tasks. We did the Pythagorean ropes challenge, and we've done projects where we use maths and produce a Vine video, go outside, even if it's just as basic as being able to consolidate the work and having time with me. because that was one of the big challenges for us as kids go up the school in maths, is that they get less and less kind of face-to-face time with the teacher. And actually, if I could hit you with a quote just now that I've written down especially for tonight, it was, what is the best use of my limited face-to-face time with my students? And that's from John Bergen and Aaron Sams's book, Flip Your Classroom, which is a kind of seminal text, I suppose. For this, there's a lot of books out there, but it really seems to be one that people are referring to the most, and they're kind of lauded as being the pioneers of the flipped classroom, as it were. So, and that's really allowed me to get more face-to-face time with the kids and able to kind of look at their learning styles and look at how they're learning and tailor my teaching to that. So it's basically just providing a wee bit more time to look at these things a bit more deeply that I think we all just want to look at in a more deeper sense.
Craig, can you say a bit more? Because I know that the project has generated a bit of interest, and it's something that you've become passionate about. And yes. I know that there's a potential that's going to lead to the kind of master's study. And you know, you might want to talk a bit more about that. I know it's kind of early stages, but can you say a bit more about it? We're not going to go through screeds of writers or whatever, but can you say a bit more about the kind of key messages of Bergman and Sams then, and the text that's Flip Your Classroom, Reach Every Student in Every Class Every Day?
I think it's at a basic level, it's really just that there's a massive potential that's there, and it's very accessible for us as teachers to be able to use ICT with a bit more kind of value and be critically reflective of how you're using technology in the classroom to do this. And it's not by any means a complicated model to copy, in a sense. You know, it's not a big undertaking that has a lot of financial implications or anything like that. It can literally just be a camera looking at you. And I don't think, for me, I've used my own model. I think I've kind of tailored my model to suit my class as I went along, if that makes sense. So from a starting point of kind of not a lot of knowledge in my part, I've kind of went away and tried to look and see and cherry-pick different bits of practice that I thought would suit my particular model, and kind of learned as I went along. And I think that's an important message, that's not, you know, there's no full stops at the end of any sentences here. I think it's just all, we're all learning as we go along, and that's a really good thing, and that's a really positive thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you look on, even if you look on Twitter, and I think it's a Monday night, hashtag FlipClass is the hashtag to search for, and there's loads of kind of chat and sharing practice going on there. So it's a kind of constantly and very quickly evolving area, flip learning at the moment. So I think that's a kind of main message I would take from any of the learning that's going on right now, is that it's kind of just, it's evolving as we go. Mm-hmm. And as I say, it's not a massively complicated model. In fact, at a very basic level, it's just videoing yourself and the kids watching the videos of you delivering the lesson or the content at home, and then coming in, I guess they could be sitting doing worksheets for 50 minutes, you know, none of us are really perhaps wanting to go down that road, but, you know, I guess you could say that was a flipped classroom. Going back to, you know, doing reading before lectures, I guess you could say that was a flipped classroom in a way. Mm-hmm. But it's more evolving in terms of kind of 21st century education and people changing things in that regard. So it's a kind of constantly evolving sphere.
Yeah, and with that in mind, and I would usually kind of ask this kind of question near the end of our show, but is it the kind of Twitter chats that are most effective in your experience, or do you need to have that kind of theoretical underpinning, or indeed kind of network in other ways with other teachers that are either trying this out or can actually claim or even show through research that it's effective? I mean, where should people start if they're interested?
I think if I was to start, when I started, where do you find the answers to anything these days? Google. If I was to start asking somebody to ask me how to start flipping their classroom, I would say go to YouTube and watch a few of the videos on what the flipped classroom is and what it means and how different people are tackling that. Go onto Twitter, you know, look at EdTech, hashtag EdTech, look at hashtag FlipClass, look at what people are doing, look at who's doing what, and who are the kind of thought leaders in this at the minute. So people like Crystal Kirch and Aaron Sams and John Bergman, and there's so much out there in the kind of social media aspect of professional learning that I think is really, really valid. Although one piece of kind of research, I suppose, that I'd like to mention, if anyone's interested, is look up Clintondale High School in Detroit. They've actually flipped the entire school. And in terms of numbers, because at the minute it's quite hard to quantify, I think. And I was listening the other night, is it Paul Kutchner?
Yeah, absolutely.
I caught up with his interview the other night, and I think a lot of what he said was very, very true, and we must kind of reflect on what's kind of really valuable. And I think a lot of what he was talking about last week at TV was to be, we have to develop a filter, because there's so much coming down now, that, and there's so much information out there, and they can't really judge what's valuable and what's valid and what isn't. And having a scientific basis for things is going to be really important in the future, as there's more content and volume of content comes at us as educators. But Clintondale High School, they've taken their failure rate in their core subjects from 40% to something like 9% using this FLIP methodology. So I think that kind of speaks for itself, that there's something in it. Exactly what's in it research-wise for us in Scotland, I'm not terribly sure. There's been not a lot of work done in that at the moment. That's what I'm kind of hoping to do myself, is to look in a more quantitative sense, mm-hmm. At what we can do to promote this, and what we can do to back it up. Mm-hmm. You know?
Now, Craig, just going back now to the way this is actually working out for you and your pupils. So we've got the videos on the YouTube channel, and I think a selection are also in one of the tabs in your blog. But crucial to it appears to be the first video, which is how to do your homework. So can you say a bit about how you've kind of set the ground rules or the ethos to enable the young people to get as much out of this as possible?
One of the major challenges that I encountered really early on was that, and I think I wrote a piece about this in the blog, was that young people don't really consume media often for learning. So yeah, they're on their iPhones a lot, they're on their laptops a lot, but they're not really using it in a learning space. It's more of a leisure thing. So for them to sit and watch a video of me teaching maths, often they were sitting down with that same mindset of, oh, this is great, this is Mr. Jameson teaching maths, but there wasn't any real rigour behind it. And I think that's what I tried to get across with that How to Do Your Homework video, and I showed a pupil in the video, and I said, this is what I want. I want you to be sitting at the computer or your iPod or whatever device you're using. I want you to have your notes jotted out just like you would in class. I want you to be taking the notes just like you would in class. So imagine, you know, you're in class in a sense, but, you know, you can be sitting in your jammies if you want. But, you know, but you should have the same kind of rigorous approach to it as you would if you were sitting in the classroom. The big positive, though, for them is that they can pause me, they can rewind it, they can watch it two and three and four times. So it's very self-directed in that sense, and the pupils are getting a lot out of it, especially as we come more closer to kind of assessments and things like that. They're able to go back and use these things as revision tools and watch again and again, instead of what they used to have to do, become like supported study sessions and things like that to try and catch up and get a kind of re-delivery of content from me. So that was a kind of major setup that I had, was to say, look, you know, I want you to act as if you're in class. In many senses, and I'm able to kind of monitor that by looking at notes jotters and so on, because I really want the rigor still to be there, even though we're using this kind of innovative approach, you know. So that's how I've kind of tackled that wee challenge. So for anybody who's thinking of flipping their classroom, I would urge them to kind of consider how young people are consuming media and what ways that we can train them better in a way to do that for their learning and not just for leisure purposes.
And I mean the videos, I find, you know, you're saying that it's a dry marker and a whiteboard, but, and you know, yourself, you can tell, you know, your teaching skills and such, like the videos are engaging. I don't really know what I mean by it, but there's an authentic voice there, and obviously there's a bit of humour that kind of comes across regularly. So, you know, they certainly are engaging. I'm wondering though, that you seem to be making it clear to young people that get the earphones in. That seems to be important. And do you give other advice? Do you give other advice as well? For example, I don't know, you know, around maybe not having multiple windows open or having numerous devices on your desk.
The advice in terms of the earphones was really just to find a quiet place. So if they had to put earphones in, then that's fine. But equally, if they don't, then that's okay too. I've kind of had conversations at a one-to-one level because, as you know, I've got 28 in the class, and they're all got different kind of setups at home. So some of them are using iPads. Some of them, I think, one boy uses an Apple TV to watch it in his room. So like, there's all sorts of different setups that they're using. But yes, I do kind of encourage them to have their sole attention on that. So, you know, don't sit on Facebook, don't sit, you know, tweeting about anything when you're trying to watch the video. My main message is act as if you would be in the classroom. So, you know, sit down, get the computer in front of you and watch it with a little bit of focus as if you were watching me. And that's my kind of main message to the young people in that sense, is just act as if you're just in the class. This is just an extension of the class time, but it's in your own space, at your own time, and you've got the luxury of being able to rewind me if you want to and watch me again. And I do encourage them to do that throughout the videos. I'll probably say that near the end. You know, I'll maybe do one or two examples instead of doing four and say, look, but you can rewind these and look at bits again. And this bit's important, so you know, might want to rewind that and have another look through that example as I'm working through it. If you're writing it down, watch it again. And I'm seeing that coming out with the data. What Sophia gives me is the time on tutorial data. So I'm able to look, even before the kids come to the class the next day, I'm able to look and see how long each young people's been on the tutorial. So say it was a 5-minute tutorial, someone's been on for 8 minutes or 10 minutes, you can see, well, they've maybe watched it twice. So you can get that kind of feedback before the young people even appear, which is so valuable to get that kind of feedback before you even see anybody. It's a real great aspect of using Sophia for that, as opposed to YouTube.
And you've kind of already touched on this, but you're not only teaching or facilitating the learning of maths, Craig, but you also seem to be giving them an idea about how there are different ways to learn as we're moving forward, that you know, you can learn online, but unless you're intentional about it, and unless you're prepared, and even and reflect on your kind of learning episode, that you don't automatically learn online.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think as there's more content that comes out, one of the reflective questions I asked you about 21st century education and how you would change things if you could, that was really a genuine question, because that's something that's really came to the fore for me as I've kind of went in more into the kind of flipped classroom journey, is that I'm finding out more that education is not location dependent anymore at all, and it's often not even financially restricted. So you're able to be educated through these like massive online open courses and MOOCs and all these different ways of learning that's now open to us. It's such a big world out there educationally, and I think that we, if we do nothing else, you know, in terms of preparing our young people for that kind of world, we need to say, look, you know, at some point you're probably going to learn online, and we should be training you in some sense to do that in a focused way and in a reflective way, and to develop the kind of skills and the filters, I suppose, to say that to kind of judge maybe quality from things that aren't of so much value in a learning sense, and be able to look at their own learning style and their metacognition and say, look, am I learning here? What am I learning? How am I learning it? How am I best learning this content? And what the flipped classroom gives, as I said, is it gives you more time again to ask these questions, which has been really important for me, is to get the young people to reflect on what they're learning and how they're learning it, and how I'm kind of framing it is I'm getting them to feedback to me about the content of my videos. So they're kind of judging me, or they think they're judging me. But what they're actually doing is they're talking about their own learning and how this has helped me learn because kind of questions, which is really valuable. So
I'm thinking now about the kind of formative assessment then that's taking place, and I think you blogged about this recently. I'm not sure if you were talking about in your own context or whether it's the whole idea about flipping the classroom, but I know you have used what you call the Coolit seat, and you can maybe explain about that in a minute. But is that part of formative assessment? Am I right in saying, you know, it's a fairly simple kind of process? You're looking at formative assessment, building the pupils up towards mastery, so that when it comes to some kind of summative assessment, they have the confidence and it's not the big panic that it might otherwise be.
Yeah, I think that's was really important for me as I kind of went towards this, or went along this kind of journey of the flipped classroom. I think once you start looking at a kind of journey of professional learning, I think other doors open. I don't know if it's been the same for you, with your chartered teacher studies and things. You start off looking at one particular area and then all of a sudden you're seeing a whole load of other things that are out there. So the assessment model for me, I mean, under Curriculum for Excellence, we try to find different models of assessment, but I think fundamentally it comes back to, in maths, you're getting a maths test. And there's no escape from that, because eventually they're going to be a higher maths exam. So we have to prepare them for that. But my concern was always, as you were saying there, you know, the big kind of scary maths assessment at the end of it. And what was important for me was, can I find ways of kind of taking the pressure off a little bit to allow them to perform better? And in terms of assessment in the flipped classroom, another thing that Sophia, and I promise I don't work for Sophia at all, but it's a very good platform, they provide a quiz as part of the tutorial, so you're able to get quiz results back as well. And that can just be very, very simple questions, so it can be added in at the end of the tutorial, but that's my kind of first hurdle, I suppose, in terms of assessment for the young people to go over. And after they finish the tutorial, we do, you know, 3 or 4 quick questions just to gauge their understanding. In the classroom, I'm using the formative assessment methods that you would always have kind of used. And I think I saw a tweet the other day, assessment as a conversation. And I get a huge amount of assessment data myself from just asking about questions. And asking insightful questions to the learners and saying, look, how do you do that question again? You know, the kind of thing. But the Pulitzer, I was in a blog I was reading, I think it was Graham Johnson's blog. I've linked to his YouTube channel. He's another trailblazer in flipped learning from Canada. He was talking about his assessment model, which is kind of built around mastery, and he uses hot seating. And I talked about using hot seating with the young people and just having a kind of conversation and videoing it to provide some evidence, some video evidence of the conversations as part of my professional inquiry, as it was. And they decided, well, we don't like the hot seat, it's too pressurised, can we call it something else? What are we going to call it? So they came up with the name themselves, the Coolit Seat. You'll see the picture on the blog there of kind of drawn penguins and so on behind it. And all that just works very simply. We'll sit and have a conversation with them about, so Pythagoras' theorem, what's that all about? And just leave very open-ended questions for them to answer and try and make it, as you were saying, try and make it engaging and fun and a little bit of humour injected in there to kind of put them at ease a bit. But then lets me, as the teacher, get quite deep and quite insightful information about what they've learned well and what they perhaps need to brush up on for any more summative assessments that are coming up. So that's kind of, I think, is that what you were looking for there? Just kind of,
absolutely. Okay, yeah, that's really clear. I'll just say we're coming into the last few minutes of tonight's show, and it's been fascinating so far. I'm busy kind of working out which final questions I can ask, because I've got so many. But I'll just say, if you're listening to a live show and you want to come in with a comment or question for Craig, that's Craig Jameson, the teacher who's talking about flipping his mathematics classroom, then you can email edutalker@hotmail.co.uk. or use the hashtag Edutalk if you're on Twitter. You've obviously thought all this through, Craig, and you know, you can tell from your blog that there's a couple of kind of wicked issues in there that you've blogged about, and you can tell you've thought through carefully. So you're not a kind of sort of blindly going into this and claiming, you're not claiming and you can't substantiate. I'm just wondering then, just for a moment, if you can talk about any limitations or frustrations for yourself, you know, and people can read your blog to kind of find out how you've got around certain things. I'm also, I'm interested in the kind of balance between the kind of future for homework, and I'm just wondering whether an alternative to flipping the classroom might be just to create better learning opportunities or learning activities, engagement, whatever you want to call it, in the home. I'm just wondering, and this might be a very cheeky thing to say, is one of the reasons why we're talking about flipping the classroom, because our approaches to homework, probably throughout the Western world, have been so horrific and unsuccessful down the years.
Very, very possibly. I mean, certainly much of the drivers behind change in education now is that, as you said, we've been doing things largely the same way for, you know, pick a number of years, you know, and change is can be quite kind of glacial in education. But I think underlying that, it's not, I don't feel that underlying that is kind of teacher cynicism, which I think is perhaps a portion to blame a lot of times, especially in the media. I think it's really that teachers are looking for proven methods. Teachers are looking for things that they know are going to work before they a lot of times will invest kind of wholeheartedly in things. And I think that's a very good attitude to have in many ways. But yeah, I think that there's definitely kind of just a flip in the classroom. I wouldn't say that it's a magic bullet in any sense. It has massive potential to change the way that we spend time in classrooms. And I think that's I kind of chosen words carefully there, I think, by saying change the way we spend our time in classrooms. I don't think it's going to change the world. I don't think it's going to, you know, alter the way that education is as a whole. But I think that, as you said, it's a valuable addition to what we already do by using that content for kind of digitally native learners to be able to access it in a world that they're comfortable with. And it just provides us with extra opportunities, I think, at the minute, because you can see a transition between traditional teaching and flipped teaching. At the minute, there's those kind of extra opportunities there. But I do think there's somewhere in the middle that we can meet and sit in where we're having a combination of video content and online content, even online assessment, and kind of using the online world in a sense in a more intelligent and well thought out way. So I think there's potential there for it to be developed, but as you say, I've by no means come in with my eyes shut and say, you know, this is the flavour of the month and this is, you know, the kind of magic bullet and everyone should be doing this and, you know, flip your classroom today. I don't think that's the road to go down, but certainly speaking to staff, and I've had the opportunity to speak to quite a number of staff about the project I've been doing. I think every teacher that you speak to does see a massive amount of potential in this kind of approach or aspects of the approach, which is great. Because all we want, I think we all want to do as a body of teachers and educators is to improve the model as it currently is. So whichever way you teach that or whichever way you do that and whichever kind of context you're in, it's important that you're able to use your own kind of critical reflection, I guess, to inform your practice. So take those things, take the good things that you see and use what works and assess what you want to innovate with and kind of manage your innovation. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
Use your own judgment and what will work for you and what you think maybe won't work or what you think deserves a chance at a pilot and go along the road in that way. Mm-hmm. Certainly, if you look at again, a lot of this is, you know, dependent on young people having access to devices that they can watch their videos on and internet access and all that. If anyone's interested in looking at that kind of thing from a kind of perspective of areas of deprivation, at Clintondale High School in Detroit is an area of massive deprivation, and the way they've got around access to devices is quite innovative. So I would suggest you go on and have a wee look at that. If you're interested.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, Craig, because I remember reading a paper, I can't cite it, but it was a couple of years ago, and it was talking about the use of, you know, I suppose, these kind of portals that you've talked about with Sophia and such like, and saying that it was a small piece of research that clearly stated that in that particular area in question where the research took place, that really it wasn't so easy for young people to get access to devices in the evening. But I appreciate that was maybe at the start of the kind of tablet revolution. So
Yeah.
I'm guessing, I can kind of read in between the lines again on your blog that's not been a problem that you've had to deal with in your own locality.
It's not been a problem for me, no. And saying that, I chose my class quite, I kind of had a wee think about what particular classes I was going to choose. And as a class, I knew would engage with it from the outset. Because I wanted to see if it would work in its own merits and not, you know, from the point of view of pupil engagement in the first instance and pupils being kind of resistant to any kind of change in the first place. So I wanted to look at the merits of flipped learning and on its own, if that makes sense, and not kind of look at, you know, possible barriers to it straight away. As I say, challenges that I have met have been how young people are consuming media, but I understand there's a challenge there for internet access and so on. And I have had be sporadic periods where a couple of the young people in the class have, you know, their Wi-Fi's been down or whatever, and I've just been able to put the videos onto a memory stick and give them that away, and they can access that from their home laptops. But as I say, I've kind of tailored each individual's approach and asked them how they're accessing the material. Some, as I say, some are using their iPods, some are using their phones. I've got one boy actually, he's going to be a professional footballer, and he's away at football training, you know, regularly going in buses up to away games and all that, and he didn't used to be able to do much written homework in that sense. Oh. He's now actually able to access the videos in the bus to his football games, and take the notes there and come back in, and he's finding it fantastic from his point of view, and his parents are really pleased because that was something they were worried about. So, and I think, as I say, tailoring it to the individual needs of the learners and your individual needs as a teacher, I think is really important.
I mean, in terms of individual needs, then just a simple question: Do you find that you're saying about it creates more time for you know, whatever, you know, deeper learning or spending more time with a young person going over maybe a particular problem? Do you find that you end up teaching more to all the young people, or is it a case that admittedly for some it needs to be reinforcement over learning, whatever mathematicians would speak of, and that you still maybe don't get to get into the kind of active learning such as the what was it again, the Pythagorean
Pythagorean notes.
Well,
that project was actually, that was the way that apparently the Egyptians used to measure right angles for pyramids was using a knot with a 3-4-5 triangle tied in it. So we kind of reconstructed one of them, and it's on the blog if anyone wants to look at it. But in terms of your question, the structure of my class is never really the same every day. I'll pick and choose activities that I think fit the kind of learning needs and the topic and what we're doing at the time. So sometimes, as I say, it might just be simple consolidation of what we've done the night before. If it's something that's quite complicated, and we'll be looking at trigonometry or something that's quite kind of formulaic in that sense, and we'll be looking at that and maybe using a bit of kind of peer instruction or something like that to help facilitate that. What I've found really beneficial is I can look at some of the data from the night before's video before we come in, so I can kind of start to formulate plans as to how I'm going to differentiate before they even come in the door, and I've got a measure of where they're at. And also, I think the young people now are a bit more willing and able to self-assess in that regard and say, look, sir, I wasn't sure about that video last night, I need you to help me. And I need you to go through things with me on a more one-to-one basis, because I think they know now that I've got the time to do that if I wanted to. So I have a set-up. One of the lessons that I set up is called a menu lesson. And what the young people do is, one that's divided into three groups in the room. So one group would be the group that feels they have to consolidate the work that they've looked at last night and wants to just attempt kind of more basic examples maybe. Another group will be taking that a step further and looking at more complex things. And another group will be doing like problem solving or kind of an active learning activity. The point being is that everybody gets to do every activity, but you get to start where you want to. So your starting point is really your starting point of learning that we talk about in the class. So once, as I've kind of got into this more and young people get more comfortable with it, They've come out of the class now and I'm saying, right, it's a menu lesson, this is this table, this is this table, this is this table, and then they're going to where they feel they are in terms of learning. So I can start at the table that's looking to consolidate and say, right, okay, let's go through this a bit slowly, you know, and get more of a kind of face-to-face interaction so you can see the, you know, the face of confusion or when something's been completely over their head, and you can get that kind of feedback, which I guess is one of the drawbacks of the flipped classroom system. If you're delivering a lesson to a class of kids, you can see very quickly if they're not getting it. Whereas if they're watching a video, you can't really get that kind of softer feedback, in a sense, back, can you? You know, it's harder to do that, but with that type of lesson, it's a wee bit easier to do that and differentiate based on their own kind of self-assessment of where they feel they're at. And that's getting more and more honest as we're kind of going along this journey. As I say, I've flipped the classroom since end of January, beginning of February, and now we're getting into, you know, the end of May. So it's a very much more honest process now when they do that type of lesson. So that's how I'm kind of looking at that aspect of it and helping to tackle that. Mm-hmm. So.
And can you say about your, I think it's there's been a bit of interest or kind of dialogue with people at Edinburgh University. Are you in a position, Craig, to say about how you might be using some of the data that's been coming out of this project?
Well, as I said in the very beginning, my kind of first step was going to the deputy in charge of S2, who, as I said, was really good in encouraging me to go forward and providing me a lot of challenge. And I think at our school particularly, at many schools now, and I would include my school in that, management are very good at giving classroom teachers that kind of autonomy to go and be proactive in their professional learning, and my school is no exception. And what they did for a few of us in the school is they brought in Gillian Robinson from Edinburgh University to look at a practitioner inquiry project, and I think there was maybe six of us involved in that, and the others are still involved in practitioner inquiry. Where it's been slightly different from me is that I think Gillian will agree, she saw a big potential in the project for it to be a little more than a practitioner inquiry. Kind of grew legs as we had more meetings about it, and she's suggested that it's definitely worthy of master study, which I'm absolutely ecstatic about and more than keen to go forward in that direction. So as I say, I'm kind of gathering data from lots of different sources as we speak, and that's one of the things that I've kind of noticed coming out of this and looking at it from a professional learning context is that evidence doesn't always have to be bits of paper. You know, I've got like loads of video evidence of just simply filming lessons, like the menu lesson I talked about. I filmed a menu lesson, and that's like really rich evidence of learning. I've got audio, I've got Google Forms I use quite a lot, and ask kind of probing questions in a Google form which is attached to the end of the tutorial, and so it might be something like how do you feel about the factorising tutorial that you've just watched, and where questions like that used to be answered with responses like green and red, amber, good and things like that, I'm now getting a paragraph and a half of exactly what questions that they feel that they're confident with and the questions that they feel they need to brush up on and what they're going to do about it. So the collection of that data, and that's something I'm really keen to pass on to staff, is using ICT in that way to gather evidence can actually make your life a whole lot easier, because all that data for me gets fed straight into a spreadsheet which I can then look at and digest kind of at my leisure, which is great from a workload perspective, because if I was to do that as a paper-based exercise, it would take me hours, but instead of that, it takes me minutes to gather the data, and then I can go through it as and when I need to. So that's where I'm at the moment. I'm kind of at the data gathering stage, mm-hmm. and looking at what it all means and what claims I can make about my flipped classroom in particular, and where I can go with that now. So I'm very much in the learning stage where I'm going back to Edinburgh University and the maths department and saying, can I get some reading, please, and learning theory and things like that to try and brush myself up a little bit. And I think especially, as I said at the beginning, started listening to like EduTalk and going on Twitter and things, and the resources that are being provided that, I listen to EduTalk on the way to work in the car and the podcast, and then going to work and writing it down furiously. I think there's so much resource that's there for teachers that it's very much more easy to access now in a way that's not perhaps as intrusive to your life as it used to be. You know, you're no longer having to go home with a bundle of books and work your way kind of painstakingly through. Where there's a place for that, and there's a place for that kind of background reading and academics, there's a lot available to us that's free and it's very accessible. So that's one thing I've kind of took from this process and this journey, is that there's a lot there and it's really accessible for us to drive our own professional learning forward.
Yeah,
and you're partly responsible for that. So.
Oh my goodness. Well, best wishes with all your work in that area, Craig. And conscious of the time, and it's a Thursday evening, we've no doubt both been teaching, and we've still got a day to go before the weekend. But
sure.
Just finally, then, you give us a listeners a little heads up to your kind of presence on Twitter and your blog.
Yeah, sure. My Twitter username is at Mr. Jameson Flips, and my blog is linked to your website. It's mrjamesonflips.wordpress.com. So contact me through Twitter. I'm more than happy, as you know, to share anything that I'm doing and share the way I've set my flip classroom up and things that I've learned so far. So by all means, contact me on Twitter. And follow the blog, and you can see what I've been up to. And the reason that I really started keeping the blog was if you look at other educators that are on Twitter themselves, a lot of them are blogging too, and I think it's a very valuable way to kind of reflect on what you've been doing periodically and keep a kind of learning diary of your own, and I've encouraged young people to do it, so I kind of joined in that respect. I've enjoyed the process of writing. It's not often an art teacher gets to communicate in anything other than grunts and diagrams, so it's quite nice to be able to do that. So I encourage anybody to have a look, and I'm more than happy to take comments and feedback today. Also, if anyone's in the Glasgow area, I'll be doing a workshop at Pedagoo Glasgow on the 14th with Kenny Piper. So if anyone's interested, I'll be giving a wee workshop in flip learning there. By all means, come along if people are in the area. I don't know if you're going along yourself to that. I think.
I'm hoping to. I believe John will be there, and hopefully Edgy Talk will have a presence. I'm furiously googling away here. Craig, can you give us kind of details about that particular event? So it's a Pedagoo event in Glasgow, and
it's on the 14th of June.
So Saturday the 14th of June, yeah?
Saturday the 14th of June. It's in Strathclyde University. I'm not exactly sure of the room or the building at the moment, but that's the one just off George Square. And as I say, you can hashtag Pedagoo Glasgow. I think it's on Twitter, or you can just Google it. I don't know if you're getting it up there yourself. I'm sure we can certainly link to that in the show notes as well, if anyone's interested in coming along and by all means have a chat there and ask me anything you want to find out about. So
yeah, no, that looks great. I have found it now, so yeah, hashtag Pedagoo Glasgow or pedagoo.org/Glasgow, and you're one of 18, I don't know if I'm allowed to say presenters or workshop facilitators, but it looks an incredible day, and certainly Edgy Talk will be there in some shape or form.
It looks great.
Craig, thank you so much for giving up your time on this Thursday evening to join us in Edgy Talk. I have found it absolutely mind-blowing, and it will be plenty for me to think about as a classroom practitioner over the summer as I prepare for the new school year.
Yeah.
And hopefully that will influence me in many ways.
Thanks for having me on, and I think we could talk for hours. I think I've written a few things down to speak about, and we've not got through half of it, and I know you're kind of keen to, I can tell you're keen to ask more as well, thanks a lot for having me on, and it's been really enjoyable, so thanks a lot.
Yeah, okay, and best wishes for the future, Craig. We'll catch up sometime soon. Cheers now.
You too, thank you.